This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Glenn the Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Deanne Sloan from Horse Nation, and you are listening to a special Halloween episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 31st. This is episode 2302. Good morning, Horse World.
He's a Halloween boogeyman. He comes with a master plan, and he drives through the night waiting for you.
I couldn't tell when the end was. Coming up on today's Halloween special, you may have noticed it's Halloween. We have another terrifying round of trivia, and this time featuring Horse Station versus the Horses in the Morning Cruise. And then we're going to enjoy a jack-o'-lantern filled with listener-submitted stories and reader-submitted stories with all equine flair. And to round things out, happy knock-knock joke day, everybody. And be careful when you celebrate, because studies show that knock-knock jokes are the most irritating type of prose ever invented.
And that is true. Well, you know, we've been doing this special Halloween episode with Horse Nation for, I don't know how many years, 3 or 4 years. I think we started it with Leslie years ago.
I'm not sure. I think we were advertising it as our third annual, but that's not to say that it wasn't done before that.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's been so long, I can't remember. I know we had Kristen, and now we have Deanne, who is, what's your official title over at Horse Nation?
The managing editor.
Managing editor of Horse Nation. And Horse Nation will explain the contest and what you guys did and what we're going to be hearing today.
Okay, so the contest, we put it out to our readers and the Horses in the Morning listeners. And basically, we put out a contest asking people to submit short stories for Halloween, with about a limit of 2,500 words. Obviously, there was some leeway there, but trying to give them a guideline. So they emailed them in to me, and of the submissions we received, I chose the top 9. It was supposed to be the top 8, but I really...
You couldn't pick. You were a softie, weren't you? Yeah.
I was.
She couldn't
pick.
And
I'm a sucker for a good Halloween story.
And you know, what's another good Halloween story? It doesn't matter, 8 or 9 or 10. That's good. And you guys, as I said, have been doing this for years, and we're excited to be able to take part every year and do this special Halloween episode. And it always seems to work out good. Like, today is a day that we normally would have been dark, because it's the fifth Thursday of the month and we don't have a show. So it worked out perfect. So happy Halloween. We hope you all have your costumes planned and you're getting ready to go out with the kiddos tonight and do some trick-or-treating. We're going to get this started, though, with one of the stories, and then we're going to come back, and we have some trivia for you. I have some trivia for you specifically, Deanne, to see how you do. Plus,
right.
I want to find out about your Halloween experiences. Everybody knows in the audience that Halloween is my least favorite holiday. I tolerate it, and I just basically appease all of you. So I don't know why that started. I can't explain it. I just never liked Halloween all that much. I must have been scarred as a child. I don't know. I don't know what the reason is. But Jamie helped us out with a reading that she did of a title. Do you know how to say that?
El Dia de los Muertos.
Thank you. Written by Elizabeth Bourbon, I think, who is also one of our listeners, I believe. And Elizabeth wrote this, and Jamie read it. So let's take a listen to this first story. I might have added some sound and kicked them up a notch. So this will be your first time hearing them, too. So we hope you enjoy this story.
El Dia de los Muertos. In an instant, The sun lost its glare and began to cast a golden glow on the cedars lining the rolling hills of southwestern Travis County. As much as she'd love to stay out on the trail well into the cool summer evenings, Sherry knew she'd better get back to the barn before dusk. She wasn't worried about ghosts this Halloween Eve, but she did believe in the white-tailed deer rustling in the brush that could send Nutmeg, her off-track thoroughbred mare, into orbit. Sherry still had work to do back at Limestone Stables tonight, and she had no time to risk spending an evening in the ER. Sherry waited her seat and gathered the mare's energy. Wait now! As if reading Sherry's mind, Nutmeg rocked back on her hocks and sprang forward with a gleeful bound, snorting happily with each stride. By the time the little bay mare slowed to a walk at the creek crossing, Sherry was beaming. This little firecracker of a mare was all treat after a year filled with nasty tricks. The departure of Sherry's husband last winter was hard enough, and then the new year had brought an excruciating decision to put down her beloved German Shepherd, Molly. And the cruelest blow of all came in June when Antonio lost his fight with the leukemia that seemed to come out of nowhere. Known to many simply as the barn guy, Antonio was the rock who had kept Limestone running through the long week Sherry had spent frozen in sadness. On the day Sherry had spent coiled on the office couch, it was Antonio who guided the lesson kids through brushing and tacking up their ponies. And when Sherry lost her grip on anger and lashed out impatiently at a lesson kid, Antonio would follow with a kind word of praise on how the child handled her pony. Antonio taught all the kids a ritual he did with all the horses. He would hold very still and blow gently into the horse's nostrils. By sharing breath, he explained, the horse sees your spirit and recognizes you. Now Sherry was better, but Antonio was gone, and everyone at Limestone missed him badly. As October came to an end, Patricia had an idea. Let's invite Antonio back for El Día de los Muertos. And so everyone planned what they would need for a proper shrine. Anne went to a panaderia on the south side for a puffy pan de muertas, the colorful bread of the dead, and garishly beautiful sugary skulls, as well as a bottle of Dos Equis Antonio had loved. Kathy picked up candles in a tall glass cylinder painted with saints and brightly colored tissue paper banners cut out in intricate patterns, and Ellen brought little skeleton figures and scraps of cloth and ribbons. Some of the kids stayed after the Saturday group lesson to decorate the figures to resemble the loved ones who had passed. Antonio's figure was adorned with the baseball cap he had always worn and his San Antonio Spurs jersey. And since Antonio would always have a menagerie, the kids made skeletons for animals that had passed. There was Cedric the barn cat, who had disappeared one day without a trace. Timothy, the wily lesson pony who had taught every kid in the barn to make sure that stall door was really latched. And Emmy put on a bright red ribbon collar on a tiny canine skeleton to represent Katie. Everyone had left their contributions in the tack room, but now the kids had all gone home to go trick-or-treating. Now it was up to Sherry to assemble the shrine. Although Nutmeg had stopped blowing after the walk through the creek back to the barn, a quick palm to her chest suggested that she was still a little warm. Sherry pulled off the mare's saddle and left her to cool down in the crossties for a few minutes. Meanwhile, Sherry brought out the skeleton figures, decorations, and gifts. Maybe she should add some carrots for Timothy. Lost in assembling the tableau, she heard Nutmeg stamp her foot indignantly as if to say, "Where's my carrot? Don't leave me here all night." Sherry rolled her eyes. Such a mare. "Give me a minute, Nutmeg. I'm almost done." Sherry returned to finish arranging the figures, moving Katie a safe distance from Timothy's hooves and perching Cedric on top of the beer bottle to taunt Katie from a safe elevation. Antonio, of course, was in the middle of it all. Stepping back in satisfaction to regard the scene, Sherry heard the rhythmic clop of Nutmeg's hooves walking down the barn aisle. "Nutmeg, how on earth did you get out of your cross ties?" As Sherry peered down the barn aisle in astonishment, she saw Nutmeg's stall door slide open. Nutmeg disappeared under her stall, and then Sherry saw the door close. As the latch clicked into place, Nutmeg's delicate head peered out into the barn aisle. She breathed slowly and carefully, and Sherry could see her lips delicately nibble something unseen. Then Sherry heard the distinct crunch of a carrot. Sherry looked back at the shrine where she had placed 3 carrots near Timothy's skeleton figure. Now there were only 2. Astonished, Sherry smiled. "Hey, Antonio," she called. "How about a beer?"
Well, there you go. Thank you to Jamie for reading that, and also to Elizabeth Bourbon for writing it. What'd you think?
I love this. This is one of my favorites. I like the tie-in of El Dia de los Muertos. I love that.
It was great. I had to look it up. I really didn't know what it was, to be honest.
Really?
Yes. I know no Spanish at all whatsoever. So I learned something
and
today.
And you don't have small children. So like, that's even right. I feel like people who aren't aware of it, when Coco came out, it made a lot of people aware of El Dia de los Muertos. So, you know.
I feel like we missed a lot of that not having any kids. We kind of missed a lot of those references. But speaking of kids, all right, I have a quiz for you guys. And we talk about this every year, and I feel like every year it doesn't really change. So what are the well, let's first ask, okay, I'll ask Jennifer first. What's your favorite candy to get when you went trick-or-treating? What's the one thing you wanted?
Oh, I could never have enough peanut butter cups.
Oh, okay, that's pretty clear. And Deanne, by the way, she still can't have enough peanut butter cups.
I'm a sugar right. candy person. Like, I like my Skittles and Smarties. Smarties are my favorite.
I like Smarties too. All right, what do you think? I'm gonna of the top 10 candies this year that they're ranking this year. What do you think is number one?
It has to be candy corn. I know that's a controversial choice, but. Gotta love me some candy corn.
It is a controversial choice, and it pretty much does taste like wax, just wax.
No, it's so good.
Just tastes like wax. Do you actually like it?
I love candy corn,
really?
And my husband hates it. We are a house divided.
Oh, I think everybody, either you like it or you hate it. I don't think anybody's in between on candy corn. Jennifer, I don't know that I've ever seen you eat candy corn.
I love candy corn. That's why I don't buy it.
I've been with you a long time, 30 years, and I don't remember candy corn ever being in the house. By the way, that's number
there's three on the list.
It's number 3 for sure.
Oh.
Yeah, you have to go with what's the one thing, and if you got them, I was actually surprised at number 1 because I thought it would be a different version of this. But if you got them when I was trick-or-treating a long time ago, they didn't have miniature bars. So you got the full-size bars.
Snickers.
You would think that would be number 1. It's number 5.
What?
Yes. I know. It's number 5. That was my favorite, by the way, Snickers. I loved getting full-size. And I still like Snickers bars to this day. Jennifer, any guess on number 1? It is a bar.
Number one, most bar, most hated or most loved?
The most loved candy that kids like to get. I'm surprised at this
one. I'm going to say Skittles.
Skittles is number 2. So, Deanne, you're right up there with one of your favorites. It's right up there. Skittles always just stuck to my teeth. I never understood Skittles.
You said it's a bar?
Yeah.
So
Milky Way.
Oh.
Wow.
Can you believe Milky Way beat Snickers? I find it hard to believe.
Right, or even, like, Twix, for that matter.
Yeah, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups were number 4. I used to love to get peanut butter cups. The problem with peanut butter cups is if it was a warm, unusually warm Halloween night, they were all melted by the time you got back. Number 6 is Starburst. Do kids like Starburst still?
Yes.
Do they? Really?
Yes, mine do, unless it's the, like, they like original Starburst, not the tropical flavor or anything else.
God, talk about stick to your teeth. and they've been around forever. Kit Kat, number 7. Kit Kats are just a staple.
Oh, that's
right?
A good choice.
Yeah. Number 8, my second favorite right behind Snickers was Twizzlers. I love Twizzlers. Back then, they didn't have the single serving size. So when you got Twizzlers, you got like the pack of like 6 or 7. So I do love Twizzlers. 9 is Twix. I never got Twix. Do you like Twix?
Oh, I love Twix.
Yeah.
You bite in, you've got
the
caramel,
the right
it like
Twix.
Stretches out.
The left or the right Twix.
What is it, left
which
or right?
Better?
Which one's better?
Wait.
Isn't there...
She doesn't watch TV commercials either.
No.
Oh, wait, I just got that back.
Also, number 10 totally is a shocker to me because I don't know anybody but grandparents that eat this, and I'm going to get emails, is Butterfingers. Who eats Butterfingers anymore?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm going to date myself here, but do you remember the commercials in like the early 90s where it was like Bart Simpson going, "Don't lay a finger on my Butterfinger"?
Yes. But that was like in the early 90s.
Last time I ate a Butterfinger.
I don't know anybody. Grandmas eat Butterfingers. I don't get it. Number 11 on the list was the poor Hershey bar. The plain Hershey bar has gotten pushed down.
I
realize that the only thing it's got going for is chocolate. But Airheads is number 12. I don't think I've ever had an Airhead.
You haven't?
No, never. Isn't that taffy like too?
Well, there's like the taffy version Airhead, and then I'm thinking Warhead. Yeah, that's the taffy. Airhead's the taffy.
Yeah, okay. 13 is Three Musketeers. Again, another candy bar that you don't hear about a lot anymore.
Right.
Three Musketeers and Milky Way. They're the same, and they're not worth it. No.
And this used to be one of the ones that if you went to a house that had these, you know, they were older and they didn't know what to buy, and what kids like is Tootsie Pops. And they were also cheap because you could buy the big bags of those for like no money at all back in
right,
the day.
Right.
Yeah.
And you couldn't sneak them in class because you can't eat a lollipop in secret.
That's
you couldn't
true.
Sneak them into school. That
that's
really
true.
Sucked.
And yeah. Your parents never stole those out of your thing either. Do you steal, by the way, out of your kids' stash?
Oh, 100%. Also, my children are 7 and 4-year-old twins. They do not need all that candy.
You mean you have 2 sets?
No, I have like the 7-year-old and then 4-year-old twins.
Ah, gotcha. I thought you were saying you had 2 sets of twins.
Oh,
I was like, oh my God.
No.
Number 15, I've never heard of this. A caramel apple pop.
Oh, yeah. They're the lollipops that come in like the green wrapper. And when you take the wrapper off, it's literally like caramel on the outside of like a nondescript.
I never heard of those.
Apple flavored sucker.
How did that beat out number 18 on the list, the M&M? Are M&Ms out of style?
Right? That's a good point, because they're classic. You would think that would be a go-to.
But now they come in those little packages that people hand out that only have like 3 M&Ms in them.
Which are hugely disappointing.
Yes, exactly. Because nobody wants just 3 M&Ms. You want the king size bag.
Right, and by the time you've opened it, like you've put in more work than it's worth.
You know what else is on this list? There's a couple more that I want to talk about. Baby Ruth, again, another candy bar that kind of is out of style.
I cannot recall the last time I had one. What's even in a Baby Ruth?
It says bursting with peanuts, rich caramel, and chewy nugget, like almost every other candy bar.
So again, I would just go for a Snickers?
Yeah, exactly. Jennifer, didn't you used to eat Baby Ruth?
Yes, I did, because they were healthy. They have peanuts in them.
Just like Snickers.
Just like Snickers.
Right. Exactly. I know who had the better marketing team.
And then number 20 on the list is for the people who really didn't want to spend any money on a Halloween treat is Tootsie Rolls. And they used to hand out back in the day the big Tootsie Rolls, the really big candy bar sized Tootsie Rolls. And those were fun.
Those are good.
Yeah.
They were segmented.
That's right. Smarties. You mentioned Smarties, and it's one of my favorites. It's number 22 on the list. I love Smarties.
I do too. They're like the sugar that basically just melts in your mouth.
Exactly. It's like putting sugar in your mouth, only without the guilt, because it's got to be healthy. Look at the package.
Somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
It says it's going to make you smart.
Left no trace. That was the great part about Smarties. No chocolate on the fingers. It was a very quiet wrapper.
One last one I wanted to mention that's on the list, candy bar, Almond Joy. Again, another one that I think is lost in the current generations. I don't think millennials know what they are.
Did Mounds make the list?
Nope. No Mounds.
Because, Almond Joys have nuts.
I tried to find an Almond Joy at the store the other day and could not find one.
I think nobody likes coconut anymore. I don't know.
Well, and again, a lot of us don't watch commercials anymore, so you don't have that jingle in your head. Do you know the Almond Joy jingle I'm talking about?
No.
The Almond Joys got nuts.
Oh.
Mounds don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can't sing. And
before we end the discussion of candies, Necco wafer.
Oh my God, that's great grandma's candy right there.
Possibly the worst candy ever made.
Ever made. That does taste like cardboard.
Necco wafers were not invented to be eaten.
No.
Necco wafers were invented to create gingerbread homes and shingles.
Or
on the roof.
Under your furniture.
Yeah, that's what Necco wafers.
Because if you left them out
really
for about 2 days, they would become that hard.
Right. And I feel like I would get, the first time you get it, you're like, oh man, this candy is not good. But then you would, or at least I did, I would like get it another time just to check. Still wasn't good.
That's the chalkiest, most awful candy ever.
Like, I think Tums taste better.
The new Tums probably do, actually. They probably do. All right, let's go to the next one. You read one. Tell us about who wrote the story you read.
Okay, so the story I read was by Ashley Francese, and she's writing about the ghost cat, which, and one thing I love about Ashley's writing is she always interweaves pieces that make us all smarter, whether they're Latin phrases or references to malevolent spirits from Ireland, which the story has both. I always feel like I come out knowing just a little more after I've read something she's written.
I have to admit, Ashley, I had to look up a couple of the things you referenced. I had no idea what you were talking about. So,
yeah, she's one of the smarter people.
Yeah, exactly. I did not feel smart listening to Ashley's story. It's well written, but boy, oh boy, I'm glad you had some of these words that I didn't have to read them. So, here we go. This is The Ghost Cat by Ashley.
This story is called The Ghost Cat, and it's by Ashley Francese. For the story you are currently hearing, I neither expect nor demand credulity. But these events are true, even if you think me mad for relating them. My soul and mind have long been burdened with the memory of the phantasm. My voice, incapable of telling the story that my pen attempts to reconstruct for you now. Many years ago, when I was young and happy, my family and I moved to an old mill. The buildings were dilapidated, the bricks crumbling, plaster flaking, and cobwebs clinging to the stone walls. On the property, there was an old bank barn, its beams sturdy despite its age. Into this barn, I moved my horse, Anansi. One silver morning, when frost lined the grass and a heavy mist hung in the air, as Anansi was grazing in the pasture, I went in the barn to clean stalls. Carrying a pitchfork, I walked into the long, rectangular area and stopped dead in my tracks. There, sunken into the hay, was the body of a cat. The cat was pure white, his body thin and frail as if it had shriveled post-mortem. His legs were outstretched, his tail stiff, his head cocked back, and his mouth and eyes open. The yellow eyes shone brightly despite his lifeless appearance. The pink of his tongue was stark against the whiteness of his teeth and coat. I leaned in closer to inspect the cat for signs of the cause of death. His body was unmarked, except for one gaping sore on the cheek where the flesh was pulled back, exposing his molars through his cheek. I recoiled in horror at the grotesque wound. No blood dripped from it, and no smell emanated from the cat. A feeling of dread crept into my stomach in the cat's presence, and I used my pitchfork to pick his hardened form up and deposited him unceremoniously in the river near our mill. For the next several weeks, life went on as usual, and all thoughts of the cat were driven from my mind. But then one morning, while the mist was rising, I opened the door to go out to the barn, and from the corner of my eye, I caught sight of a white cat darting through the bushes. A shudder went down my spine at the sight of the apparition, but I shrugged it off as likely being a stray that had found its way to our property and continued with my morning chores. But month by month, I saw the cat more and more often. He would skirt around the edges of the barn, slink under the water wheel, appear unbidden in the field. Late at night, I would see those unholy yellow eyes peering at me from the rafters, or I would catch sight of his tail disappearing into the woods as I rode by on Anansi. Gradually, I began to be aware of his presence, even when I could not see him. I would be riding Anansi, and he would spook seemingly for no reason. But in the air, I could feel a tension, and I would know the cat was there. Somewhere. I knew Anansi, could feel him too. He was a flightier and more unpredictable than he had been before the appearance of the cat. Sometimes he would raise his tail and scream, staring off into the distance, and I would know that he was looking for the cat, feeling its presence. One night, while throwing hay, I heard a low growl emanating from the darkness. I switched on the light, looking desperately around for the creature, but saw nothing. The hair on my arm stood on end. I knew he was there somewhere, lurking in the shadows and mocking me. Anansi's tension and nervousness started to show itself in his health. He lost weight, his gray coat seemed ragged, and the muscles on the underside of his neck bulged. One cold, dreary morning, he colicked. The vet and I blamed the weather, but then he colicked again 2 days later, and again 2 days after that. We started to suspect that he was suffering from ulcers and treated him accordingly. My vet asked me if there had been any changes in Anansi's life that could be causing him stress. And, knowing that I likely sounded mad to any rational person, I told him about the dead cat I had found in the barn and my belief that I was being haunted by its ghost. To my surprise, he did not laugh at me, but turned deadly serious and asked if I knew what a puka was. At my puzzled expression, he explained that his grandmother had grown up in Ireland and told him about pukai, mythical creatures with white and black hair that appeared in rural communities as harbingers of good or evil. He advised that I should contact an exorcist as soon as possible. Rather than be buoyed by this conversation and the vet's belief in my story, I began to doubt my own sanity. What if I had imagined the whole thing? What if I really was insane? What if I was inventing a ghostly apparition of a cat that was haunting me? What if I just enjoyed the thrill that accompanied fear? And if Anansi was feeding off my tension and making himself sick? So I read up on exorcism, to err on the side of caution, and perhaps to exorcise the demons that were plaguing me. I burned sage and sowed the stone dust at the barn's foundation with salt, thinking of Cato's cries of Carthago delenda est, and of the Romans sowing the Carthaginian soil with salt. As I sowed, I chanted, Feles delenda est, Feles delenda est. Surely, there's a place there for Latin. Is it an exorcism? I felt foolish, but afterward it was as if a heavy weight had been lifted from my shoulders. Anansi, too, seemed to notice a difference and started gaining weight and muscle. He calmed down and started to act more like his usual self. His coat shone, gleaming almost white, and his brown eyes were bright and alert, no longer haunted as they had been previously. The months passed without incident, and in the spring I entered Anansi in a hunter pace. We had always loved running through the woods and jumping logs and coops. Anansi could be spirited and headstrong, but he was an excellent partner and was quick on his feet and adjustable to the jumps. The morning of the pace, I had a feeling of dread deep in the pit of my stomach. I felt the cat's presence. Anansi was nervous that morning as well. It was as if he knew the cat was near. He reared and struck at the trailer, screaming violently. At that moment, I thought about turning back, but I reasoned that if Anansi and I got away from the farm, all would be well. So I pushed on and loaded him. As my parents drove me to the event, the feeling of dread nagged me. I tried to tell them about the cat, but they dismissed my fears as superstitious nonsense and competition nerves. A possessed cat, they scoffed? Really? It's like the plot to some silly movie. But to me, the cat was anything but silly. It was menacing. It was a thing of evil. But how to make anyone understand? I would end up sounding like a crazy person, rambling about pukas and malevolent spirits. So I tacked up Anansi and I set out on course. The last thing I remember clearly were the unholy, gleaming yellow eyes of the cat peering out from underneath a particularly large brush fence. From there, the images come into my mind in bits and pieces. A pool of blood, the words echoing in my head that my beloved horse had not made it. The world spinning, the flickering fluorescent lights of a hospital room. The fall happened many years ago. Too many for me to count as my brain was rattled. And the doctors say I am often confused these days. The days before the accident are crystal clear, but the years afterward are muddied. The trauma to my brain damaged my ability to speak, leaving my voice inept. When I have visitors, I sometimes manage to express a word or phrase. The word that most often passes the barrier of my teeth these days is cat. For he is now my constant companion. But now, rather than making me uneasy, when I look into the cat's soft, brown eyes, I am comforted. Where once the cat was menacing and dangerous with glowing yellow eyes, now his eyes are the soft brown of my dear departed horse. Anansi's soul lives on in the cat. I should have known it would have ended this way. Pukas are notorious shapeshifters. The god Anansi, a notorious trickster. And I am comforted by the presence of my cat and the padded walls of my cell.
Didn't see that ending coming.
I know. Ashley's great. Her writing is fabulous. She likes the twists and turns. She does a great job. It has this very, like, Poe feeling.
You know, when I was editing it, I heard the walls of my padded cell at the end, and I went, oh, my God. And then you think back. She's a good writer, because you think back and go, was any of it true? Did any of it really happen? You know, it was very well done.
Well, I actually know a little bit about that.
Okay.
She and her friends have joked, they did have a barn cat pass away, and since then have kind of had a series of misfortunes at her barn. And so they were kind of joking about, like, the curse of the dead barn cat. So there is some truth behind it.
Have you ever experienced a ghost?
I don't know. I don't think I'm spiritual enough to, like, if I had, be like, oh, that was a ghost. I think I'm much more just like, oh, like the wind creaked.
Yeah. Well, we've told the story. I think I tell it every year, but we have new listeners. So later on, I'll tell you about the ghost that Jennifer and I did have in our house. But I don't know that you've heard that story, so we'll tell that a little bit later. But first, we have to do some trivia. All right, Jennifer, you're emceeing this puppy, right?
I am playing Alex Trebek today.
Okay, good. We appreciate that. And we have to acknowledge the person that actually wrote the questions, correct?
Carissa sent me a heap of questions. I had to elaborate a few of them a little bit so we had some background why I was asking such a question. And unfortunately, several of them had to be removed from the list because you kind of sort of gave the answers in our candy.
Oh, no.
Earlier. But,
oh, no. Sorry
about
that.
Thank you very much, Carissa, for questions and inspiration. It was awesome.
Now, usually we say if you don't like the questions or don't like the answers or don't like the trivia, contact Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. But now you can just find Carissa on Facebook and you can bust her chops. So if you don't like it,
right,
talk to Carissa. Thank you. She's one of our auditors, and we really appreciate
Thanks
her doing that.
Thanks for taking the pressure off, Carissa. Appreciate it.
All right, let's meet.
Okay, so here's the scoop.
Yeah.
Well,
let's meet our helpers.
Okay.
All right. Then they can explain the game when they're ready. You want to introduce your compatriot, your partner?
So my partner is Casey French, who is a barrel racer, a blogger, fan of Horse Nation, and she likes to describe herself as the complicated and quirky equine athlete, or not describe herself. She likes to say that she attracts, my apologies, the complicated and quirky equine athlete.
Good morning, Casey.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. So, Casey, tell us about, are you still a barrel racer?
Yes. I currently, as we speak, like Saturday, I will be out braving the weather conditions with the rain and cold, and I'm going to be barrel racing. So, yes.
And tell us about your horse.
So, I have two horses. The one that I compete on now, his name is Packin' French Socks is his show name, but we call him Joe, and he's a quarter horse. And I've had him, gosh, I've been running him for maybe 7 years now. So I've had him for a while now, and he's a two-year-old. And then now I also have a thoroughbred, off-the-track thoroughbred that I've been training for the past year. And he will probably start to compete within the next 30 to 60 days.
Yay, good for you.
And his name is Alvie, yeah.
Are we seeing a lot more thoroughbreds barrel racing these days?
Well, yes and no. I think that it's catching on the more that becomes successful, especially with social media. Now that there's a lot more known, a lot more people are starting to try them. And I think it is going to be something that you see a little more of in the future, for sure.
Very good. Casey, are you a huge Halloween fan? Are you an ace in the hole? You're going to help your team win?
You know, I'm going to do my best. I've looked up random Halloween facts on Google, so I feel like maybe I'll be a little bit ready.
Okay, good.
She's much more prepared than I am.
Yes, I'm more prepared than me, too. Except I do have an ace in the hole. I want you to meet, she's one of our auditors and one of our longtime listeners. Her name is Diane, and she lives here in Florida, I believe. Good morning.
Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Jen. Good morning, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. Now, I have to confess to Deanne and Casey that I may have an ace in the hole here, and I did not know this before I booked her, but tell them why you're an ace in the hole.
Well, because I've been a practicing Wiccan for 30 years, so I probably should be pretty good on my Halloween trivia. If not, I'm going to have to turn in my card.
So, guys, I think I found the only Wiccan that listens to this show. It's so funny because we kiss-biz Sam at Christmas at Radiothon. She always does a Jewish song for us because she's our resident Jew that listens to this show. Well, now we have a resident Wiccan I didn't even know about. So there we go.
There you go.
Diane, you could expect to be on every Halloween from now on. We expect
Sounds
you to be
good.
Diane, do you have a horse?
Oh, good Lord. I have 5 of them.
Okay, good. So, see, it wasn't a shill. She actually does have horses. So I just wanted to clarify that. All right, Jennifer, how's this going to work?
How's this going to work? I'm going to ask a opener question. That's going to decide who gets to go first. All right. And when I ask the opener question, whoever answers first gets it. So whenever you have the answer in your head, you say your name out loud, and we're going to go to you. That makes sense for everybody? You only hear 4 yeses.
Okay, so your buzzer is just say your name. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, wait. So, okay.
That's the first part.
Okay.
Got that? Okay. Okay.
So now, with the opener question, am I saying my name first?
Yeah, if you know the answer, that's like your buzzer. Just call out your name.
Call out your name. Okay. So if the answer is right, you're going to hear this. All right? If the answer is wrong, you're going to hear this. All right. That's it.
She stole that off my bike.
Uh-huh. Sounds good.
Then we're going back and forth from then on, right? And you guys will be able to collaborate with future questions. You'll be able to collaborate with your partner and then come up with an answer. All right.
That's right. There will be collaboration. No calls home, though.
2 rounds of 3 questions and no Googling. No Googling allowed.
No Googling.
We're trusting
Turn off
you.
Your browser.
What about,
no Googling.
What about Lifeline?
That's right. No Lifeline. That's right. Google's not your friend. All right. We're ready, Jennifer.
All right. You're ready? Okay. Name one of the stars of the film Hocus Pocus.
Deanne, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Ding, 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 ding,
that
ding,
was
ding,
quick.
Ding.
You've seen that movie a few times.
I actually haven't.
Really?
I've just been so big on social media lately that it's all over my Facebook feed.
There you go.
That was quick.
Thank goodness for Facebook.
Well, there's no question. She didn't have time to Google that one. So I guess Team Horse Nation goes first.
Team Horse Nation goes first. So you guys can collaborate over your answer. But there's no stealing. If they get it wrong, they get it wrong. All right?
Okay.
So here we go. Team EN, your first question. Spiders have 8 legs, but what other body part do they have 8 of? Is it A, mouths, B, eyes, or C, stomachs?
Casey, I think it's eyes.
I agree.
We're going to go with
Final
eyes.
Answer?
Let's go with eyes. Yeah.
Ian gets a point. Yay!
Yay!
I would have went with mouths. Good guess, guys.
I figured that one.
So full disclosure, I may have had to do a Halloween craft with my 4-year-old twins in their preschool classroom, and I was given a hard time by the teachers because I only brought enough googly eyes for each child to put 2 eyes on their spiders and not 8.
Ah, no. So you were wrong, and that's how you got that answer.
And so I have learned from my parents.
You got in trouble with preschool.
It takes some skill, I'm telling you.
That's funny. I didn't start getting trouble in kindergarten. Right, so. You're doing good. All right, are you ready, Diane? We're going to get this one.
I'm ready.
Team EN takes the early lead. First question for Team Hit'em. In 2016, a Belgian man set a new world record for the largest pumpkin, weighing in at 2,624 pounds. By how much did he surpass the previous record in 2014? Did he surpass it by 13 pounds, 30 pounds, or 300 pounds?
Well, how much was his winning poundage again?
His winning poundage was 2,624.
What do you think, Diane? I don't think your Wiccanism is going to help here.
No, unfortunately. I'm thinking 300. I mean, let's go for the gusto.
That was my first inclination, too. You want to go for that?
All right.
All right, we're going 300.
They're going 300. Final answer.
Oh, yay!
Woohoo!
Yay! Woohoo! We got it.
And it's tied up early on. Is this going to set the tone for the rest of the match? We'll see. Team EN.
Actually, it's HN, Jennifer. I think you're thinking of Inting Nation. It's Horse Nation.
Yeah, yes. You're right. But, you know.
Wrong nation.
Wrong nation.
It's a different nation.
You know?
Close enough. Nation. There you go. Team HN, your next question. Willing to bet that you didn't know that the pumpkin was an interloper. Which vegetable was originally used to make jack-o'-lanterns? Was it celery?
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Bell peppers or turnips?
Celery, bell pepper, or turnips? Definitely can't be celery.
Yeah, we're going to get rid of celery.
Take that one out. Bell pepper, maybe you can make a jack-o'-lantern out of a bell pepper.
Bell pepper? Oh, and see, I want to say turnip, but I will yield to you.
And what was that? Is there any more? Is that what it,
it's bell pepper, it? Turnip, or like celery?
Yeah, definitely not celery. I say bell pepper.
Final answer?
Yeah. Well, for me. What do you think, Dean?
Yes.
That? All right.
We'll go with bell pepper.
Oh. No. Turnip.
Turnip!
How can you make that? How could you make a jack-o'-lantern out of a turnip? How does that work? It did.
You knew this one, didn't you, Diane? You knew that one.
Oh, hell yeah.
You got so excited.
She was. I love throwing celery in there just to make you think, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
That's where I come in, like, celery. I want to see it.
You need a very small knife.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's on Pinterest somewhere. So.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, Team Hit'em, pressure's on to stay ahead. Your question, various species of flowering flowering plants called corpse flowers get their name from what characteristic? They smell, the texture of their petals, the locations where they grow, or their appearance.
Diane, any thoughts here?
Good Lord.
That does sound like something the Wiccan would have all around the house is corpse flowers, but...
No. Okay. We like pretty things.
Okay.
Jasmine, honeysuckle, patchouli, you know, okay. all those hippie type things.
My first instinct was smell. That was my first instinct.
I was wondering if they were maybe like coffin-shaped flowers. That was what I was wondering.
I don't know. What were our choices again, Jennifer?
Your choices are how they smell, the texture of their petals, the locations in which they grow, or their appearance.
Well, now I'm changing to the locations where they grow. I'm thinking they grow where people would disturb the soil and bury people.
All right. We could do that.
All right. Location where they grow. Final answer. Oh, that's how they smell.
Stuck with smell.
Ah!
Apparently, they smell like, and I'm using air quotes, rotting flesh.
Okay.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, let's put a couple of those in the house.
All right, so it's tied up after the first round. Going into the second round, it's Team Horse Nation. Are you ready?
We're ready.
We're ready.
Ready. Okay. According to Time Magazine, the most popular human costumes for 2018 were from this video game.
No multiple choice?
Yeah.
No multiple choice. Oh, my God.
It's getting harder as we go here.
Okay, so we just have to come up with it?
Yep.
Okay. Casey, my
obviously
thought was...
you two are heavy gamers.
Casey, my thought was either Minecraft.
Minecraft? Okay, I'm going to just go with you. I was going to say, yeah, I don't know either one of those. The only video game I know about still to this day is Mario and Luigi, and that's always been my favorite.
Now, we're only going back 25 years, but okay.
Yeah. I saw Baby Mario the other day at the Boo in the Zoo. So, I mean, I think it's still loved by all. But I'm going to go with you, Deanne. Whatever you think, that sounds more 2018 than mine. So,
And wait, was there an age group or was it just like generally the most popular costume?
The most popular. Time Magazine. Think of the source.
Oh, I don't know, man. See, that makes me want to go Mario and Luigi.
You think?
I don't know.
I tricked you up. I probably shouldn't have said
that. The kids on my block say Minecraft. Let's go with it.
Minecraft? Final answer?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give you half points. It was Fortnite, which is practically Minecraft.
Oh!
It's not practically Minecraft.
Yes, it is. I'm Alex Trebek, and I say I didn't know what Fortnite was. Thank you, Carissa, for putting into your notes that it was a video game, because I would not have figured that out.
It was only the most popular video game, like 100 million people playing it last year. So
that's about the only way I know.
Like, yeah.
My friends have some teenage kids.
All I could think of was how can you have a Halloween costume after a period of time? Like, how does that work?
A Fortnite?
No.
You're going to have a two-week Halloween costume?
That was such a good hint, and I missed it. That was such a good hint.
There we go. Here we go. Team Hit'em. Are you ready?
Ready.
We're ready.
What was the most popular pet costume for 2018?
Oh. Doesn't have
to
be.
Do you mean for what kind of pet, or what they dressed the pet up as?
What the pets were dressed as.
Okay. I'm there's always the ballet dancer. You always see a lot of those, right? With the tutu. But then I'm kind of thinking that the Marvel movies were really big. So maybe, maybe it was like, I don't know. Maybe it was Iron Man or Batman or Superman. We see a lot of Superman costumes for pets.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking the Superman myself.
Or it could have been a witch. No multiple choice either. You're sleeping on the couch tonight.
Well, I also lately I've seen bat costumes and shark costumes for dogs too. So, that's a tough question.
We got to pick one, huh?
I don't know. I kind of like your Superman.
All right, Superman. We're going with Superman.
Final answer?
Yep. We don't even get a half
a
point.
Pumpkin.
What?
It was what?
A pumpkin?
Don't blame me.
I feel like that's anticlimactic.
A pumpkin?
I'm with you there on that one, Glenn.
It's like, haven't we done pumpkins for the last 30 years? Pumpkins still... No creativity when it comes to your pet.
Right.
So we're still...
I'm pretty sure the way they figure this out is how many costumes of pumpkins made for pets were sold in pet stores throughout.
Yes.
I think
it makes sense.
It is kind of easy. So Horse Nation is leading by half a point. Is that where we're at?
That's correct.
Are we doing one more round? Do we have time to win?
We have two more rounds.
Oh, okay.
To get
that was a lot of time to win.
All right. Team Horse Nation. In the 1966 Charlie Brown Halloween special, Linus forgoes trick-or-treating because he is waiting for whom?
Casey, do you know this one?
I know it.
Wait, are you there?
Oh, come on. We can't steal.
No, wait. Is Casey there?
Casey, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Casey,
yeah,
I think it's the Great Pumpkin.
That's a good answer.
Final answer?
Yeah. Final answer.
That was too easy.
If you didn't get that, we were going to hang
too
up.
Easy.
That was too easy.
I really didn't know that. I'm
really?
I'm going to go out there. No. I thought it was going to be like his blanket or Lucy or something.
No, I knew that one. I think I have seen that one a few times.
Here we go. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Casey was too young. Casey's too young to know that one. All right.
I watched my fair share of Charlie Brown. I will say, but I didn't know that.
Now, do
All
we
right,
get an easy one?
Horses in the morning.
Yeah.
You're up. One
right.
more in this round.
Yep.
Are you ready?
We're ready.
Okay. In the original 1984 Ghostbusters film, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man attacks New York. What form does the giant take in the final scene of the 2016 reboot of that film?
Oh, geez.
God, I didn't even see that one. I totally don't remember.
We just saw the original Ghostbusters. They had it in theaters, remade, redigitized. So we went just last month, Jennifer, and we saw the original Ghostbusters in the theater. That was a lot of fun.
Which one?
But that had the great big Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I don't remember. Was it the one with the girls? Which one are you talking about, the remake?
Yes, that's the one.
What form did it take?
Man,
I have no idea. I know I saw it. It was probably my least favorite Ghostbusters.
Maybe it was the Michelin Man.
I like that. I don't know, Jennifer. Michelin Man.
Final answer?
Sure. I guess.
But you knew that. Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I never would have guessed that.
I would not have gotten that one.
Yeah. Do you guys even remember the end of that movie? I mean, I don't even remember it. That's how non-memorable.
It was the exact same ending. It was just a different character. Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
All right. We now have Horse Nation pulling ahead.
Not looking good for
us. 1.5 points. Yeah. It's looking good. All right. Final round. This is going to be easy. They're true false. So I'll make it easy on you. Team Horse Nation. The earliest known print media report of trick-or-treating in North America, get this, was in a 1911 issue of the Chronicle of the Horse. True or false?
Oh, Casey, take this one.
I'm going to say false, but I don't know. Really.
We'll go with it.
I'm just guessing.
Going with false?
Yes. Oh,
yeah, finally, I got one. Yeah, I thought it was crazy enough to be true.
Yeah, I did too.
That was literally going to be a coin flip for me. I'm like, I don't know, choose one.
All right, Team Horses in the Morning, are you ready?
We're ready, and this is worth 12 points, so we can win.
Yeah.
Here we go. In the finale of Mary Shelley's classic novel Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus, that's the title of the novel, believe it or not, the monster kills himself. True or false?
God, it's been so long since I've seen any Frankenstein movie.
I'm going to say false.
I'm going to go with you. It's been so long, I have no idea. We're saying false.
Every incarnation I've seen, he survives at the end, but that could be just, you know, to have franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
yeah.
Go with false.
False? Final answer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. He floats off on an iceberg, which in a really, really creepy way is what they do in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. when they leave.
Now, does it say he actually died, or did he end up on the island of misfit toys? Do we know Frankenstein
ended
up there?
Well, we don't know.
Well, if he floats off on an iceberg, he's not dead.
He's not dead. He could still be alive.
Well, and at least he didn't kill himself.
Well, right.
It's like Schrodinger's cat.
Exactly. Just
but
like
he
that.
He was never alive to begin with. He's Frankenstein, remember?
Okay. Who wrote these questions again? What was her name?
Carissa,
this is all your fault. That was the wrong end to that question. It was the wrong answer.
Well, I think that one's ambiguous, so we should get another one.
Yeah. You know what? I have bad news for you. It's not going to help. We're losing that bad. So.
All right, Team Horse, we've got to get to the finale because I want it to be tied up. Team Horse Nation, are you ready?
Oh, I thought that was the finale. Okay.
No, it's not. Again, this is true or false. In 2017, Halloween ranked above Christmas in consumer spending. 2017, true or false?
I'm going to say false.
I agree.
Final answer?
Okay. Final answer.
Yeah.
They get all the easy ones.
I knew the answer to Frankenstein. Just going.
Oh, did you? Yeah, but do you consider that a suicide? Was that a suicide? It wasn't a suicide. He just floated off to be on the island of misfit toys.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should have gotten that one.
But he was really sad and upset, so you kind of have to.
You have to assume.
Right. Final question, people. Final question. This is for Team Horses in the Morning. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a true or false question. Guising, souling, and mumming are all activities associated with the early celebration of Halloween. True or false?
Diane! You're a freaking Wiccan. You're supposed to help out with questions like this.
What was the choice? What was the list again?
I will repeat the question because you're falling behind big time. Guising, that's spelled G-U-I-S-I-N-G. Souling, spelled like you think it would be. And mumming, M-U-M-M-I-N-G, are all activities associated with the early celebration of Halloween.
Well, I'm going to say that's got to be true because Halloween is related to the celebration of the souls that have passed. So that sounds like it would be logical to me.
We're going with her. True. Yay, we got one!
Woo-hoo!
Well, that's congratulations, guys. You're the winners. Horse Nation wins this year.
By half a point. Woo!
By half a point. We're going to have, actually, 1.5 points. But you've just pretty much killed us. So congratulations. Good job.
What do we get?
I wish there was a prize, but we're too cheap here.
You get a case of Necco wafers.
Oh,
that's right.
I relinquish my points.
All the candy we can't hand out tonight, we'll send to you guys. So thank you for playing, Casey. We appreciate it. Good luck at the barrel race this weekend. And Diane, Diane probably has lots of ceremonies to go to today. So I don't know anything about Wiccanism. So one of these days we're going to have to talk, Diane.
We'll have to catch up.
Okay, good. Thanks for playing. We appreciate it. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.
Well, that was fun. You guys kicked butt.
That was fun. The questions were hard. At first, when you were like, what body part does a spider have eight of other than legs? I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Would you have known that had you not gotten balled out in preschool?
I think I've vaguely seen images of spiders with more than one eye or more than two eyes, so I probably would have guessed it.
Well, we're going to do another story for you from the story contest, and this was written by Sarah Grable, and it was read by, a lot of you are going to recognize the voice, Helena, my old co-host on Stable Scoop. I asked her to do this one, and she did it for us, and it's longer than the others, but hang with it, it's worth it, and it's so well written. Sarah did a good job. It's very descriptive. It's like, this one truly is a mini story, isn't it? It really is.
It absolutely is.
So hang with it and enjoy. Helena did a good job reading it.
The Last Ride of Galloping Gordy. The barnyard tang in the crisp autumn air smelled like home already to Johnny Dawkins, and he grinned as he got out of his battered yellow Toyota. The grandstand of Greenwood Downs loomed ahead, a hulking shadow in the early morning darkness. The light of the parking lot lamps drowned out the stars, and tendrils of mist coiled up from the layer of frost on the blacktop. Johnny breathed deep and hugged his canvas jacket tighter around himself as he crossed the nearly empty expanse. The barn employee's entrance was far less dramatic than the visitor's area, but someone had taken the time to decorate the gate with corn shocks, pumpkins, and potted mums. "Card?" the watchman asked mechanically as Johnny approached. Johnny shuffled in his pocket for his new track ID and handed it over. "Ah, fresh off the presses," the watchman said, squinting at the laminated card on its lanyard. "First day?" "First day this early," Johnny replied. "I started last week, and Ed Rennery's been showing me the ropes. I'm on my own today, and Jenna Atherton wants a workout on the whole string before they ship south for the season." "Jenna's cutting that deadline close again this year," the watchman said. "October 31st is the last day the barns are open. She's got to have those stalls empty and ready for the deposit inspection by midnight tonight, or the Downs management will be after her. Better get a move on then, if you're supposed to get a run under her whole barn. And take care running the horses out there. Not sure what it is about this track, but it does funny things when the night lights go on." "Funny things? Like what?" "Well, sometimes jocks will say they see things they don't expect out of the corner of their eye. Distances get tricky to judge. My guess is that it's something about the spacing of the light poles around the track. Nothing to worry too much about. I just thought I'd warn you, especially since you're the new guy and you're looking at your first time on the track in the dark." "Appreciate it," Johnny said, touching the brim of his new Atherton Racing baseball cap. "And another word of wisdom. You're working for Atherton's?" The watchman gestured toward Johnny's cap. "You've got to pass Warrendale Farms to get to Atherton's stalls. Their manager keeps a hot pot of coffee and a box of donuts out by their tack room every morning for everyone to help himself out of." "Thanks again." Johnny could almost taste the sugar and caffeine. "My pleasure. Take it easy on the track today. Buena suerte." "Morning, Johnny." Jenna Atherton half grunted from inside one of the stalls when he arrived at Atherton Racing's stable block with Warrendale coffee and donut in hand. Atherton Racing's owner and head trainer was a wiry woman in her late 30s, with short cropped hair, deeply tanned skin, and the no-nonsense air of a woman accustomed to wrangling fussy animals and fussier people. "Looking to stay an exercise rider your whole career?" she said with a playful gesture at Johnny's breakfast. "I've got a couple hours until sunup," Johnny said through a mouthful of jelly donut. "And almost everyone else has moved their horses south for the winter. Won't be nearly the traffic to deal with, especially this early. And, last I checked, you hired me as a groom and exercise rider, not as a jockey. You never know, the day might come that I need a jockey, not an exercise rider with powdered sugar in his stubble," Jenna said with a grin. She gave the colt she'd just been inspecting a friendly pat on the rump as she emerged from the stall. She adjusted her baseball cap over her straw-colored hair and wiped her hands on her jeans. "Sugar, the chestnut filly on the far end, is ready to run. I'd start with her and work your way up the aisle." "Distances?" he asked. Jenna fished in her pockets and handed him a crumpled sheet of notebook paper. "Here, your marching orders. 2-mile gallop. Just a stretch of the legs for the little lady today?" "Yep. I only wanted to blow a little energy before the long ride south. No big challenges or stresses. Big plans for that filly next year, once she turns 3. "What kind of plans?" Johnny asked, his curiosity piqued. "If she starts running the way her pedigree says she can, she may be our ticket to the big leagues. Her granddaddy was a great horse. My dad was a jockey back in the day and bought him at auction for not much more than a bag of peanuts, using his own purse money to do it. The horse had been through a handful of barns. None of the trainers could handle him, much less get him to show on the track. Dad bought him for his pretty bloodlines, figuring on getting into the breeding game. But one morning he watched that stud cross the pasture so fast it made his head spin. So back out to the track they went. They entered a race, truly the underdogs on paper, but against a good strong field. The race went beautifully. You couldn't have asked for a better trip, and every other jockey in the race was scrambling to account for a challenge they didn't expect. The entire grandstand was on their feet for the horse that none of them had bothered to put money on. Then, leading the pack and coming down the home stretch, the stallion's heart gave out. Jenna's voice caught, and she dropped her eyes to the ground. "That's a 2-mile gallop for Sugar," Jenna finally said, her voice a bit huskier than usual. "You got it, boss," Johnny said. Story time was over. Sugar met him at her stall door, her amber eyes bright and glittering. She nickered as Johnny found her saddle and bridle in her tack trunk, and he grinned at her jockey club name engraved on all of her gear. "Trick or treat," he said to himself. "Perfect horse for me to take out for the first ride on Halloween day." Sugar nickered, and Johnny quickly got her saddled and on her way across the paddock to the track. An outrider held the filly for him as he swung aboard, and they set off at a swinging trot to warm up while Johnny adjusted his stirrups and put his goggles on. The track was empty, save for the handful of outriders patrolling the oval. Johnny took a deep breath, easing Sugar up into a lope and relaxing her into the gate for a furlong before he began to let her out into a gallop, taking full advantage of the empty racetrack. As they rounded the far turn, Johnny heard hoofbeats coming up fast behind him. He looked under his elbow and saw a burly black stallion gaining ground on his chestnut filly. The jockey guided the big black up alongside Johnny and Sugar, matching their pace. "How you doing?" the jockey called out. "Just a nice little gallop," Johnny shouted back. "Atherton's filly?" "Yeah. Jenna wants you to open her up, see how she does alongside another horse." "She told me just a 2-mile gallop," said Johnny. "Trust an Atherton jock who's been around the track a few times. Let the filly strut." The black horse started to pull ahead of him, and the jockey glanced back at Johnny with a challenging grin on his face. Johnny grinned back and closed his hands on the reins, feeling a surge of energy out of Sugar as the filly sensed the change in their plan. She regained the ground to match the burly black, stride for stride, without Johnny even having to ask her for the speed. "Come on, kid," the other jockey shouted. "Race you to the wire." Johnny did a quick check of his bearings. "That's a mile. I'll see you at the end of it." The black began to pull away again, his stride stretching out effortlessly. "Let's get him, Sugar," Johnny muttered, beginning to urge the filly onward. He only had to ask once, and Sugar responded instantly, finding another gear and matching the stallion's pace again. They raced around the track together, stride for stride. Johnny barely noticed that they were attracting the attention of the patrolling outriders, who began to canter down the rails behind them, ready to step in if they were needed. Still, the two riders pushed on, their horses running neck and neck and gaining speed as they rounded the final turn into the home stretch. Only then did Johnny show Sugar the whip. Not a touch, only a look was all the filly needed to understand what Johnny wanted from her. With a great kick, Sugar surged ahead and took the lead away from the massive black. Johnny looked back only once as the filly passed. The black's jockey was grinning ear to ear, shifting the reins into his left hand to raise his right to Johnny into a combination wave and salute. As the filly pulled ahead by a length, then two, then three, and crossed the finish line, still gaining speed. "Whoop!" Johnny hollered, pumping a fist in the air. Sugar, sensing that the rush was over, backed off into a brisk canter as the jockey on the black came up alongside them again. "That was some nice riding, kid," he said. "There's a great jockey in there with some practice. And Jenna certainly has the right idea with that filly. She's going to be Atherton Racing's ticket to the big leagues. Got her granddaddy's speed, that's for sure." "Thanks, man," Johnny said, beaming. The jockey's big black slowed to a brisk trot, and the pair turned into a loop back toward the grandstand and the winner's circle. "Hey," Johnny shouted. "I didn't quite catch your name back there." "It's Galloping Gordy." "Johnny!" A shrill shriek cut through the crisp pre-dawn air. "Pull up that horse this second!" Johnny instantly obeyed, bringing Sugar back down as quickly as he dared from her pace. His exhilaration vanished like mist on the track, replaced with terror at Jenna Atherton's fury as the trainer stormed across the dirt toward him. "What were you thinking?" she fumed, barely able to speak. "Get off of my horse." I was just following directions," Johnny tried to explain as he kicked his feet free of the stirrups and slid to the ground. Jenna took the reins from him and began, with trembling hands, to inspect Sugar's legs. "Your directions were to take her for an easy 2-mile gallop. You just ran a mile like there was a Triple Crown trophy at the wire. The jockey on the black said that you don't make this worse by making up some story. Jenna cut him off with a snap. You're lucky I don't have security march you out of here this minute. I'm not making this up. The jockey. Johnny spun on the spot, searching the now empty track for the big black stallion. Jenna shut him down again with a withering glare. Johnny, you've been alone out here. Just you and the outriders and whatever idiotic possession you had to disobey my orders and put a valuable racehorse at risk. Jenna? One of the outriders jogged up. That filly just turned a mile in a minute 35. What? That can't be right, Ed. That's what I've got, too, another outrider said as he rode up. A minute 35. Galloping Gordy said it was impressive that we beat him. He said you were right about Sugar being Atherton Racing's ticket to the big leagues, Johnny blurted desperately. Jenna froze, the color draining from her face. What did you say? Galloping Gordy said Sugar is your ticket. He said that with practice I could be a great jockey, and that Sugar is going to the big leagues. Jenna stayed silent, finishing her inspection of the filly. Johnny held his tongue, afraid that anything he said would have him escorted from the track. Jenna, Ed murmured, his voice shaking. Jenna, look at the hoof prints. Good Lord, the other outrider said, seeing what her partner observed. There are two sets of galloping tracks. Laura, hold the filly, will you? Jenna said. Keep her walking. She needs to cool out. I need a closer look. Laura rode up and took Sugar's reins, leading the filly off around the track. Eddie followed Jenna and Johnny as they picked up and followed the black's hoof prints. Their path matched Johnny's story perfectly, running alongside Sugar's path on the outside before peeling off in a trot toward the grandstand. A collective chill ran down all three of their spines when they discovered that the tracks vanished halfway across the track. Johnny, we'll hot walk the rest of the horses only today. We can finish packing their gear to move out while they're in the walker. We'll talk later about getting you more ride time. So I'm not fired? Johnny asked. Jenna Atherton didn't answer. Instead, silently walking the rest of the way to the grandstand and vanishing through the ladies' room door. Want to ride back to the barn? Ed asked Johnny. Sure, Johnny replied, accepting the outrider's hand for help up to ride double. What was that about? Galloping Gordy Atherton was a legend of a jockey on this track, Ed said. Jenna was just a wee little thing when his horse went down in a race. Gordy died in the wreck. That black stallion of his rolled clean over him. Looks to me like Gordy's still keeping an eye on his little girl and the horses, though. Johnny's flesh prickled as Eddie put his horse up into a jog and they returned to the barn. The sun was just beginning to creep over the horizon, painting the sky in a pale blue and orange. Johnny tried to shake the feeling that someone was watching them and wondered, after the morning's events, what else his career with Atherton Racing would bring.
Well, thank you. Helena read that. We appreciate her reading that. And that was written by Sarah Grable. I think I've read a story that was similar to this in the past, but I love all the little details she throws in.
I know. She did such a great job. And I thought that she really was quite a master when it came to the dialogue.
Yes. And then the tracks at the end going halfway. That was a nice touch.
Yes, absolutely. I really enjoyed reading that one.
That was good. Well done. Well done, Sarah. All right. Well, we want to thank... we have one more story for you, by the way. We're going to play the show out with it. But first, I want to thank Deanne and all of Horse Nation and everybody who wrote the stories. They did a great job. And there's more stories, right?
Yeah, there are. So the four you're hearing today, three of those are up on today's Horse Nation. But the fourth and five others are also up on the webpage. So if you're looking for some spooky or touching or sometimes funny Halloween stories, go to horsenation.com.
Now, if you want to cry your eyeballs out and you're a listener to this show, you're going to go read one that was done by Kristen, who's been a regular on this show over the years. And everybody in the auditor room knows Kristen, too, because she's an auditor. And Kristen, when she got her draft horses, posted about them. She came on the show and talked about the draft horses that came from the college she went to. And since then, they both died. And then Kristen wrote a story about draft horses dying. And you sent that one over. I sent it to Jamie to read because I'm cruel like that. And Jamie called me up. Literally, she never calls me ever on the phone. We never talk between shows. And she called me on the phone crying and said, I can't read this story. I'm not doing it. Kristen made it into this ghost story. But oh my God, Kristen, you had us all in tears.
It was. It was so touching. It was. It's really, really worth the read, but do it when you're not in public and people can't see you ugly.
And not
guy.
Driving.
Right.
Don't, don't read it at the red
definitely
light.
Don't read it while you're driving.
Yeah, exactly. But don't have anybody read it to you while you're driving either. Kristen, it was very well written, but we all know the story. So it was like none of us could do it. I couldn't do it. But, you know, and I own draft horses, so I know what that was like, too. So, Kristen, it was very well done, but Kristen didn't offer to read it either, you notice. So,
there.
Thank you. What's new coming up on Horse Nation? Anything?
Well, as we head into November, you know, I hate to say this. I hate to be the person who does this. But as we head into November, we're getting into thinking about the holidays. And so we're going to be looking at some, you know, holiday shopping gift guides. We'll have some fun with Christmas and generally the holidays by doing, you know, we'll love to do our spoofs on Christmas carols and other holiday songs. So that's looking forward. That's where we're headed.
Terrific. And of course, with Radiothon coming up, I wanted to let everybody know that Leslie, of course, of Eventing Nation, previously Horse Nation, regular guest of the show for 10 years, will be joining us again for Party Hour, the last hour on Radiothon. So she'll be back, as usual, with child in tow. So she'll be joining us there, and we appreciate her doing that. And we'll be hearing from Leslie every once in a while here on the show still. Thank you so much to Deanne for joining us. We really appreciate it. Now, we're going to play this show out today, and we will be back tomorrow with Really Bad Ads. Get your ads into Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. And we're playing it out today with a story, Manassas Ghost Ride by Alicia Schuler. And Alicia did a good job with this, and she set me up to do a lot of sound effects and Foley on this one. So it was a lot of fun to do. Thank you, Deanne.
Yeah, you're welcome. I had a good time. Thank you.
All right, let's go back to the Civil War. The Manassas Ghost Ride by Alicia Schuler. In the spring of 1998, I was serving in the U.S. Navy and had the good fortune of bringing my horse with me to my duty station in the Virginia, D.C. area. I had a weekday off, so I loaded up my old mare, Ellie, and headed to Manassas National Battlefield. I'd been there before on foot with the family and took the regular tour. That's when I noticed the incredible horse trails. Manassas has a museum and shop in a great spot to view the manicured main battlefield site. There's a pedestrian sidewalk, and from there, the guide pointed to the woods on one side of the battlefield and explained how the rebels came barreling out of those woods after crossing the stream, Bull Run, and successfully overran the north. The equestrian trail winds around the outside of the battlefield on the other side of those same woods. This is where Ellie and I rode. It was a beautiful afternoon and so peaceful. The horse trails are quite a bit longer than they look, and we didn't get started until after lunch. So by the time we came back to the spot behind the woods, sunset was threatening. I knew the trailer was not too far away, and the park closed at sunset, so Ellie and I picked up the pace. Right there, behind those woods where the Confederates made their deadly charge, Ellie began to spook a bit. She stared into the woods between us and the battlefield as if she could see someone. I couldn't see anything, though. So I had her do a few circles and urged her on. Then I began to hear the noises of many, many people moving through the woods. They grew louder, and I could hear the shuffling of many feet and muffled commands being passed. Well, of course, every battlefield has reenactors that come out and play soldier, so I wasn't very concerned. But why couldn't I see them? By now, Ellie was pretty worked up and spooky. My buckskin mare was a pro on the trail, but these noises turned her shoulders brown from sweat. She rolled her eyes and flicked her ears towards the woods with her head coming up higher and higher. I decided to take a side trail, not really allowed, thinking that if she had caught just a glimpse of the people, she would calm down. It sounded like they were right there, but as we pushed through the underbrush, we still couldn't see them. We rode where we could just see the edge of the battlefield through the trees, but no people were there. Ellie turned her head from side to side and snorted several times. I tried to spot someone, anyone, rustling around in the woods. I was so baffled that I thought there must be speakers or other special effects attached to the trees. Finally, Ellie had had enough. She stopped and stood stiff as a board under me. I kept looking around for the speakers, but the more I thought about it, the less possible that seemed. We were a long way from any power source. A cold chill went up my spine as several someones seemed to pass right behind us. No speaker could simulate that. I took a deep breath and realized we were in the thick of the noise of charging soldiers. I held that old buckskin back as she walked stiffly through the underbrush like a coiled spring. She eased up, and we left the sounds of the soldiers behind us. On the way back to the horse trail, I tried to make sense of what had just happened. It was spring, but the undergrowth really wasn't too thick. I could almost make out the grass lawn of the battlefield from the horse trail. So why the heck couldn't I see what sounded like hundreds of reenactors? By now, sunset had begun and the light was fading. Poor Ellie was so relieved to get out of the woods and back onto the horse trail. A park ranger stopped us almost as soon as we were back on the trail. He was doing a sweep of the trails before sunset, and he had noticed my trailer. He was an older man with a stern, weathered face. I apologized for leaving the horse trail and explained that I was trying to give my horse a look at the reenactors so she would quit spooking. The park ranger sighed and looked off in the distance for a minute, but he turned back towards me and explained that there were no reenactors. I shuddered a bit while I explained about the noises. He cut me off with a hand gesture and said, "Did you see anyone?" "No," I answered. "That's because they aren't here today. However, your experience isn't uncommon." He said that if I had any doubts, to drive up to the park museum and I could see from there that the park was deserted. He also pointed out how close the battlefield was and how you really should be able to see hundreds of people if you could hear them. He had told me that he had heard them before and was sure he would catch a whole pile of trespassers. But after a wild goose chase and several other rangers laughing at him, he found out about the ghosts. He glanced at his watch and told me I should hurry back because he needed to shut the gate for the horse trailer parking. Then he simply drove away. I patted Ellie's neck with a shaking hand before pushing her into a steady jog. I took a glance back towards the woods and shivered a little in the evening chill.